So the topic of the weekend that I want to speak about is the qualities of a beautiful mind. Last night I spoke at the Nalanda Center about the potential within our mind of nobility. We really have a capacity, each one of us, and we have this potential, this option, really, in our mind to develop and enhance those very human qualities that ennoble our life. And I'm thinking particularly of generosity, of loving kindness, of understanding, of patience. When we look at the notable beings in history that we feel are really that we recognize as having really manifested the human life in some unique way. And then we look to see, well, what makes us feel that way about them? We see that it's because of the development of some or one or some or all of these qualities that are just uniquely human, so far as we know. You know, the capacity for understanding and patience and love and generosity and living simply in humility. And it's clear that, you know, we all have this capacity, and we all have this experience to some degree. But as we also know, we don't often manifest the best within us. And it's due to many reasons, including habits, fear, procrastination, lethargy. There are many reasons that we don't manifest the best within us. But when we come to know of the potential, and when we feel the urge, when we feel motivated, then we can further develop any of these qualities. And certainly when we come to spiritual practice in this tradition or in any of the other spiritual traditions, I think they all will ask of the practitioner to recognize the potential and to aim for it and to do what they can to manifest it in their life. And I think a good human being, whether they're a Christian or a Hindu or a Buddhist or an atheist, a good human being would be recognized in any culture, in any spiritual tradition, as someone who'd really done their work. The differences between the cultures and the religions are maybe more theoretical and esoteric than the differences in a human being who is practicing well within any of those traditions. So one of the obvious qualities of an awakening or a good human being is that they have energy, that they really are aware of this element of their life, that they have energy and they use it in a way that benefits their life and the lives of others. Then I think this is one of the marks of an ennobled life, is that there is a recognition of our commonality, our common humanity, and a willingness to share knowledge, understanding, resources, love, material goods with others to help relieve, or maybe just to help them live more easefully. We can call it compassion, or we can call it whatever we like, the bodhisattva ideal, but it's really to recognize the commonality amongst us and to use our own life as the research laboratory to know if this is the way it is for me, this is the way it is for you, and this is the way it is for all beings. And as I mentioned last night, we in this room, out of all 7 billion people living on the face of the earth, were at the top of the heap. We really have resources and conditions in our life that the vast majority of humans alive today and humans that have lived throughout history could not imagine and would never had. And so we're living at the top of the heap, and yet I'm sure each one of you knows from your own life experiences and from the life that you share with others, it's not easy. Life's hard. Life's a challenge. There's doing as well as we can, we still can find plenty to complain about. And it's no different for anyone. You know, as I asked last night, out of all of your close friends, fellow workers, relatives, neighbors, do you know anyone that's not struggling with something in their life? That's the way it is. That's a fact. That's just the way it is. And so when we recognize that in ourselves and in others, and we are moved to address it, when we're moved to do what we can, one of the qualities that is going to be required is energy. So I want to speak about energy today as one of the qualities of the awakened mind, or one of the qualities of the good human being. Maybe the most apparent kind of energy or effort that we're all very familiar with is the effort to initiate some action, the initiation of to do anything. You want to bake bread? You want to write a book? You want to raise a kid? You want to get here to this event today? You have to initiate a tremendous amount of energy to move the mind, the body, the heart, and all of the resources that have to be marshaled together, aimed in one direction, and fueled. And that takes a tremendous amount of energy. If we just look at the amount of mental energy and commitment and financial resources to put on a day-long event like this, we begin to see how much is required. And it's our own mind and the minds of others that do this. And without having the kind of the creative thought or the proactive wish to do something that's not already in the pipeline, that there's no momentum for, there's something new, there's something that's just created out of random conditions to make something as organized as a loaf of bread or write an article or whatever it is you do. It takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of energy. And we're familiar with this kind of energy because, well, we get up every day. To get through the day, you need a lot of that. So what is it that moves us? What is it that moves us to make this energy, to arouse this energy, to focus it, to direct it towards something we want to do? Well, the first cause, if you will, is there's got to be some sense of urgency. Now is the time to do it. And a sense of urgency is one of the primary ingredients for making effort to do anything. If there's no urgency, I don't think procrastination is unique to any one of us. I think it's a universal, it's just inertia. And our minds have as much inertia as dead weight bodies. And it takes a lot of, urgency to begin to wake up to moving the mind, moving the body in a direction that will benefit our life and benefit the lives of others. When we feel a sense of urgency, we then have to have some faith. Some faith or some trust that if we make this effort, there will be a result. We don't do much without expecting a result. And luckily we have a lot of experience in doing everything we do, whether it's meditating or fixing a car or what else, and we know that if we make the effort, apply the energy, we can rely on our knowledge, we can rely on our previous experience, we can trust, we can have faith that something good or something beneficial or something desired is going to come of this. And it works in the world of physics and families as well as in the works of the mind. If we make the effort to awaken, if we make the effort to really understand our own lives, our own suffering and the causes of suffering and the end of suffering, it'll happen. But it takes some trust. It doesn't happen immediately. It takes some effort to do that. In a large sense, a lot of the effort that we make in life is planting seeds. We plant seeds hoping that we'll remember to tend them and that we'll tend them correctly or properly, and in time that they'll flower and bear fruit. And without that understanding of the life cycle of everything, we wouldn't plant the seed. If we didn't think it was going to sprout, flower, and fruit, we wouldn't plant the seed. And so how you imagine your life, how you perceive the future, how you imagine your relationships or understand your relationships with others, conditions whether you plant the seed and what seed you plant. So our understanding of our life is very important. How we understand our life, how we understand what we're doing here with our life, and what's possible in our life, is immensely important, for it will deeply condition the seeds of intention that you'll be cultivating. And if we really don't have any hope for the future, if we really don't see ourselves as an effective agent for change, we won't make the effort. And so really understanding that we have this potential, it is developable, we can work on it. If we understand that, if we have trust in that, if we have faith in that, or if we've seen it in others, and if we nurture the understanding with our effort, then we'll see the result. But it takes trust, it takes faith, it takes aspiration, it takes effort, and it's this initiating effort which is kind of like the moving of inertia. But once we get some momentum in practice, or we're going down the road of towards our goal, we inevitably, and this is an important understanding, we inevitably meet obstacles. You're just going to meet obstacles in anything, everything you do, everything you attempt. It's going to look like an obstacle. We don't yet understand that it's an opportunity, but it feels like an obstacle. It stops the forward momentum of us getting, having, becoming, doing what we want. And so it's not uncommon to meet an obstacle and drop our interest, drop our aspiration, and initiate another one, another direction that we think is better. This is a big mistake. This is a lack of understanding, really. You know, in the spiritual search, many people will do the smorgasbord thing. They try a little this, they try a little that, they read the Bible, they go to a couple of mindfulness retreats, they do a little chanting, a little this, that, until they find the spiritual practice that seems to resonate with them. And then they kind of spend more time. And they go into it, and at some point, it gets hard. It's really not easy. It's more challenging than we might have thought. If at that time we remember, that other spiritual group, they had more fun. I think I'll go there. And we leave the path we're on and we go check out another path. It'll be easy too in the beginning. And at some point, as we move along in our development, we're going to meet the same challenge. It's going to look different. It's a different person. It's a different place. It's a different chant. It's a different something. But we're going to meet the same obstacle. And if we think, this isn't working either, and we go find another, shop for another, well, you can see what's happening. We're just going till we meet the first obstacle, and we aren't really getting the benefit that any of these paths of practice offer. So the kind of energy that's needed to initiate a path is very different than the kind of energy that's needed to overcome obstacles. So we need to understand that. Initiating our practice, whether it's the first minute of the sitting or the first retreat that you do or whatever the initiation is very different than how you're going to deal with the energy that's required in overcoming the inevitable obstacles that are going to appear. When I talk about, or when I mention obstacles in practice, or when I mention obstacles in life, it often looks like the obstacle is outside of us. It's that person, it's that regulation, it's that financial burden, it's that something out there that seems like the obstacle. But in every case, it's really our own mind. It's something in our own mind, how we're relating to that person, that obstacle, or what we think is an obstacle, that person, that regulation, that financial commitment. And it's our own fear, it's our own intransigence, it's our own self-pity, it's our own anxiety, it's our own lack of resolve that is the real obstacle. And that's why in spiritual practice, as well as in whatever else you do, it really is working on yourself, working on your own mind, coming to know your own mind. And when we know, or as we know, more accurately, more fully, more clearly, then the obstacle is removed. Sometimes it takes a lot of endurance, though. And I think we have to be prepared in life to endure. Endure really demanding, challenging, painful experiences. Fear is painful. Shame is painful. Not getting what you want is painful. We need to see these and learn how to endure them. Why? Well, as we know, life brings with it some pain. Physical pain, mental pain, emotional pain, psychological pain, tension, stress in our lives. Just to be clear about it, is there anybody that doesn't experience that? I mean, I hate to be the bearer of universal news, but that's the way it is. And when we see that, we often also see that we resist it. We oppose it. We try to get rid of it. We judge ourselves for feeling how we feel. This is a waste of time. And we do it. We're thinking that it could be or should be otherwise. it never is otherwise. We would be better off willingly accepting pain than to resist it. Because we're going to feel it anyway, pain and fear and anxiety and stress and other manifestations of pain. The longer we struggle, the more we deny it, the more we kind of wish it was otherwise, and the more we feel victimized by others, regulation, whatever it is, the more obstacles we see. But as soon as we come to the end, as soon as we recognize and come to the realization and accept the fact this is the way it is, and the fact that it can be dealt with. It can be dealt with, as it all can be. Then fear of pain is not an obstacle. Pain is going to happen. When we fear it, it's an obstacle. When we accept it, if you're willing to experience pain willingly, openly, acknowledging this is the way it is for everyone, nothing can stop you from reaching your goal. Nothing. If you're not afraid to feel pain consciously, with full awareness and acceptance. And you're going to feel it anyway. Why not shift your understanding and your own aspiration? This can be dealt with. And it's a simple understanding. It seems so, well, what's so important about that? But it makes all the difference in how you approach what appears to be obstacles in your life. With that understanding, obstacles just become another opportunity to grow. And I don't want to be glib about it. It doesn't mean that it's going to suddenly be pain-free. The understanding doesn't change that. It's still there. But our understanding of how to approach the obstacle, how to understand it, shifts. And then it's all really the way it always has been, the way it always will be. And it can be dealt with. So we initiate our direction in life. We overcome some of the initially appearing obstacles in life. And the way that we do that is to sustain our energy. You know, when in life, whether it's in practice or in your relationship or with your kids or your job, you get to the point where you just go, oh. You know, you see what happens when you just go, oh. The body collapses. But it collapses because the mind has collapsed. When the mind collapses, there's no energy. The challenge, the real task for us is to recognize how and when the mind collapses. When there's this little clunk. Because we've given up. We've withdrawn from the moment. And we've just abandoned our aspiration with that. And it's not that you have to get really macho and really aggressive with your energy. You just have to see when that moment comes. When is the moment that, clunk, you collapse in on the sense of struggle, the sense of impotence, the sense of being incapable. And that shift in the mind can be the object of awareness. When you make that the object of awareness and you collapse, you're right there for it. You collapse and you're right there for it. In time, the habit of collapsing weakens. And in time, it just isn't, it is no longer an option. And it's because of just this drip feed of intention, trust, effort, or energy, really not so much efforting, but just having the energy to recognize what is going on. This is significant place in practice, where we're not just initiating energy, making revving it up, but we're going along, not collapsing, just willing to stay there for whatever comes up. To make a decision, to aspire in some direction, requires that we're going to have to let go of a lot. We're just going to have to pick and choose one among dozens of options, and we have to let go of the others. This is a different kind of energy than the initiating energy or the energy of non-collapse. It's the energy of wisdom that understands this behavior or this belief or this action, this thought is not beneficial to the intended goal. We're not headed in, it's not aligned with our aspiration. And so much of our dissipation, really, in practice is that we're doing too many things that are going in too many different directions. And we can't marshal enough energy to accomplish any one effectively. This is, well, multitasking, to put it bluntly. This is multitasking. We can do a lot of things at once, but none of them very well. Well, this is good for Twitter and Glitter and that kind of communication, but it's certainly not enough to ennoble your life. If you really want to ennoble your life, it's going to take a little more persevering, selective avoiding, and it's this kind of energy that we also want to be aware of. Knowing what to avoid and knowing the energy of letting go. Or knowing the energy of how to wait. Do you know how to wait? Do you know how not to become entangled in anything? It takes a strength of mind, an energy that I call strength of mind. We have to be willing to, well, not do anything. Not to pick up a book, not to turn on the glitter, the Twitter, whatever. Either one. And to watch the impulses in the mind to engage, to go, to respond, to react, and to let them go, to avoid them, to just not pick it up. And I know many of you have spoken to me, and I certainly have seen it in my own life, where we just try to do too much. And we don't feel satisfied with anything that we get done, because there's always more that we haven't done. So learning how to strengthen the mind from this incessant demands for its attention is force of energy to be reckoned with, something to be recognized and to be developed, is how to say no. You know, I call it the Nancy Reagan practice. Just say no. Just say no. And while she may have used it in one way, I think I have a slightly different spin on it. I think it's really useful in our life to learn how to just say no to behaviors and people and energies and ideas that does not support our aspiration. I mean, it's your life. Where do you want to go with it? What do you want to do with your life? It's your choice. But if we allow ourselves to be pulled in the direction of everything that comes by, your life is not yours. Really, it's not yours. It's whoever's selling the most colorful, loud experience that you're pursuing. And so it takes time to really know, and this is why awareness practice is so essential. It takes time to know yourself, to really know what your choice in life is, and then to pursue it, and to really remain committed, to have that kind of enduring commitment to what you have seen, or what you have determined, or what you have aspired to. And there's a lot of pruning required to just prune off the, you know, the secondary growth that is not going to ever bear edible fruit. I, being of the male gender, have kind of I guess you'd call it a hunter mentality. My wife Kamala, being of the female gender, has a gatherer mentality. So we do not go shopping together. Because I go hunting and she goes gathering. But nevertheless, a few years ago at Christmas time, we were going shopping together. And our daughter was around 20 at the time. And so she was taking us to the shopping center. And as we arrived at the shopping center, and she said, she dropped us off, she said, "Now, Mom, focus. Dad, float." And I think for each of us, we need to really recognize where we are on this float and focus spectrum, and know how to adjust our energy so that we're balanced, so that we bring a balance to each moment. And sometimes we're too focused, and we really need to learn how to float. And sometimes we're too floaty, and we really need to know how to focus. It's not that one is right and the other is wrong. They're both useful in their own time. And it's through awareness practice that we're going to know for ourselves when we are floating, when we're focusing, and how to reestablish balance. This is the challenge of developing and sustaining, maintaining right energy in our practice, in our life. There's one more arena of energy I want to talk about, and that is the energy to finish. Think about your life. Think about all the things that you've started in your life, whether it's art projects or books or relationships, or it just, we have started an immense number of projects. And now, look at how many of them remain unfinished. It's easy to start. It's very difficult to finish anything. And it just takes, well, a shift of energy. The starting and the initiating is really exciting. The accepting of obstacles and challenges and working them through can be also very demanding and energizing. The wrapping it up, the finishing of projects, whether it's our life project or our kids or our book or whatever it is, takes a refinement of energy. You really have to let go of all the initiating thrills, all the challenging juice, and just track down every thread of distraction, every thread of dissipation, every thread of, "I don't care, I've been working on this thing for so long, I just want to get it over with," and actually bring it to a conclusion, to sustain the energy in a very precise, in a very subtle way, to see it through. This kind of energy is very, it takes a tremendous strength of mind not to be distracted, not to be pulled off into something more exciting, starting another project, and But just staying there for what is all too familiar, what you've been doing for so long, or what you've been committed to for so long, and bringing it to a close. And part of the reason, or part of the challenge is, what would happen if you finished everything you'd started? Where would you be? If you didn't have another something, well, it's like this. What would happen if you ever got to the end of your to-do list? You know, nothing left to do. Nothing. Could you handle that? No, that's kind of terrifying for us sometimes to think about nothing to do. Well, luckily we don't have to think about that. It doesn't happen. There's always something to do. But learning how to bring a project, to bring our life, to bring our practice, to bring anything to a close takes a very refined energy. A continuity and a sustainability that is, very different than the initiating energy or the overcoming challenges energy. Because at that point in the practice, or that point in your project, nobody's pushing you. It's just you and your aspiration. That's it. Can we sustain? Can we recognize it? Can we still value it? Can we endure the boredom, the familiarity? Can we allow the possibility of being complete, finished, done, and what that might mean or what that might feel like? It's a challenge. And yet, that's the direction that we're moving. That's the direction we're going with our practice. You know, the space shuttle, and I mention this frequently, the space shuttle that they send up from Florida, and it goes up and it circles around a bit, and eventually, a few days later, it arrives at the space station. Well, they say that on that journey, the space shuttle is off course like 98% of the time. It's off course. And yet, it still arrives at its destination. Well, our practice is kind of like that. We aim for whatever it is you're aiming for. More understanding, more patience, more loving kindness, more whatever. And we get the feedback, 98% of the time you're off track. And yet, if we're willing to recognize every time we're deviating from our aspiration, every time we're collapsing energetically, if we recognize that and make the adjustment, we will arrive at our destination. That understanding is really helpful when we move into mature practice and really are refining our aspiration, refining our energy for finishing the job. And I invite you to consider what in your life you're willing to commit to finish. What is it that's left undone or half done or, you know, lingering in your life? In your family, in your relationship, well, anywhere in your life. What is it that is undone but still sucking energy? And can you shift? Can we see a way to finish it? Only we can do that. Nobody can remind you. Nobody can offer you any other suggestion. It's you with your aspiration. energy is required to do anything. Nothing is accomplished without making some effort. When we understand this, we can accept and willingly work with all the different energy that's required in our practice, in our life, in becoming a good human being.